Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Gellerman.
And I'm Steve Curwood in Cancun, Mexico, at the United Nations Climate Talks. While nations bob, weave, and delay about many issues here, agreement in one arena is advancing smartly. A way to keep carbon locked up in trees. It's called RED, reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation.
The RED issue, I think as many people have been following it, is very, very significant.
That's Deputy U.S. Delegation Chief Jonathan Pershing, who says the U.S. is already committed to provide $1 billion for a 50-nation partnership to implement RED.
If you combine the land use change and the forests, they account respectively for the better part of a quarter of total greenhouse gas emissions. It's become a significant issue, a significant opportunity in these negotiations.
RED is also a major opportunity for conservationists who for decades have been trying to save the world's rainforests with little success. Under RED, owners of forests would be paid to stop deforestation and keep the carbon in their trees. The Nature Conservancy, perhaps the world's richest environmental organization, is already trying to get RED going on the ground. It's piloting a new approach in Borneo that could provide a template for the rest of Indonesia and other countries as well. From Eastern Borneo, Living on Earth's Ingrid Lobet reports.
Borneo. Indonesians call it Kalimantan, tropical forest iconic for its orangutans and its seeming endlessness. Coal mines and oil palm trees have flattened much of it, but you can still see some if you get up high enough. Nawa Irianto, with the Nature Conservancy, climbs the rungs of a fire tower.
Kalimantan in the past is just almost like this, all of the island. But now only in the remote area we can find few like this.
Far below, a blur of brown-gray swings from tree to tree, monkeys.
If brown or red is, then it's the very rare one.
For years, the Nature Conservancy tried to protect forests like this one by buying them. But even a group with a $1 billion budget can only afford to buy a fraction of the forest. It's a kind of triage. Conservancy biologists pore over satellite photos of disappearing forest. They know most can't be saved.
I think, you know, the mentality that we, the conservation community, has had for a long time is sort of this painful process of prioritizing only the most critically endangered places.
That's Bronson Griscom, a climate specialist with the Nature Conservancy. Once wildlife experts identify the very most endangered places, they try to protect them, for example, by making them into a park.
And that is and remains a core strategy for the Nature Conservancy. But, you know, the world is not going to be one big park, and we recognize that.
Even when land is protected as national park, these parks often exist only on paper. Hungry people, sometimes people who were displaced to create the parks in the first place, farm and hunt inside the parks. Plantation companies build roads. Park rangers are few and underpaid. Faced with this reality, the Nature Conservancy made a major break with the past. It began working with logging companies. Griscom says conservationists figured out a lot more animals survive in a timber concession than a forest converted to agriculture.
The difference between a well-managed forest logged using sustainable, well-thought-out logging practices that are designed to mimic natural disturbance in a converted forest, converted to some kind of plantation like oil palm, is night and day. I mean, you're talking about a system that is maintaining almost all of the biodiversity on the one hand, as compared to a system that's maintaining very little of it.
The Nature Conservancy says, just come take a look. So we travel to the end of the road, and from there take a boat to Long Pai, an indigenous Dayak village. Jonas Lacan, a community leader, welcomes visitors into a traditional raised house. There's a computer and maps of the village's traditional forests. Just a few years ago, Lacan recounts, this village was locked in a conflict with a well-known timber company that was clear-cutting.
They cut down our fruit trees. They even cut down the trees where we keep our bees.
At a certain point, the community got fed up with the company and took away the keys to the bulldozers in protest. This cutting was contrary to the way they'd used the forest for hundreds of years.
Jadi selanjutnya, melihat keadaan-keadaan perusahaan yang tidak komit dengan apa bantuan.
We held a protest and halted their production. We shut them down for 3 years.
And for three full years there was a standoff. Villagers and logging company didn't talk. The Nature Conservancy got involved, and people in Long Pai Village began to organize and then negotiate with the timber company. They won the right to monitor tree felling, and the company agreed to avoid cutting in certain areas.
Bisa menerima perusahaan itu kembali karena
with TNC's assistance for mediation, we took the company back. Before the conflict, they cut down any kind of timber they wanted. Now we monitor their activities, and they cannot take any tree less than 2 feet in diameter. That's our way of conserving our forests, because if we cut the small ones, we won't have any more trees left.
So, resolution. And now several people have filled Jonas Lacan's living room, and they want to say why this forest is crucial for people who live here.
Apa saja di sini bisa laku ini, seperti sagu.
Everything we do, we take from the forest. Potatoes, vegetables, sago palm, rattan. You can gather them and even get enough to sell them.
To me, the forest is like my car, because I can get wood to make my boat from the trees there. That's why we care so much about our forest, because it's like our transportation.
We're very careful about which trees we cut down. In fact, we only cut down trees when we need to build our boats or our houses, because we depend on the trees for our bees.
At the mention of bees, several people have something to say.
Honey is our sugar. We mix it in water and drink it.
Itu kan kebutuhan kepentingan banyak orang. Sementara kami yang ada dalam lingkungan itu sendiri.
It's so much easier for people who don't depend on the forest. They can just make decisions from afar. But for us who depend on it, if the forest is gone, what will we do?
The villagers say they're satisfied now with the timber company and the logging is more sustainable. The Nature Conservancy is trying to build a replicable model based on experiences like this one in Long Pai. They're hoping to build a model for all of Borneo, or even the whole country, a model for keeping carbon out of the air, having communities benefit, and protecting forest life at the same time. To understand how, remember that as part of international climate talks, richer countries are pledging billions of dollars to poorer nations to help them develop cleanly so they can leapfrog the dirty industry of the last century. Billions of dollars are being committed to preserving forests and the carbon within them to address climate change. These billions dwarf the interest the world has ever shown in rainforest protection until now. Again, the Nature Conservancy's Bronson Griscom.
You know, you're really talking about financing for forests all over the place and level of financing that would generate national scale reductions, a substantial decrease of the total deforestation across a country. Instead of dealing with sort of this triage approach where it's like, oh my gosh, we have to prioritize a few spots, you know, and just go after those, you know, it's really a much bigger scale.
In fact, the Nature Conservancy sees international climate finance as the last big opportunity for tropical conservation. But for carbon money to actually change the game, village-level efforts like the one in Long Pai must be scaled up to whole country reductions in carbon emissions. In this area of Borneo, that cannot be done without timber companies because they lease 40% of the land. So the Nature Conservancy is approaching them one by one to get them to improve their practices. It's an approach some environmental groups would find questionable. Red splinters spike up like daggers from a fresh tree stump. And swiftly, a 240-horsepower Caterpillar bulldozer drags the log, racking the trees along the way. Finally, bulldozer and log arrive at the logging road, a muddy gash. Probably 80 feet across. 60 feet of road, another 10 feet of pile. When it rains, these roads pour silt into the streams. This is Belayan River Timber's concession. It's been clear-cutting. But the man in charge here, Pak Totok, instead of seeming defensive, seems dismayed.
Ya, sebagai seorang forester, ya... Sebagai seorang forester, ya, sangat sedih.
As a forester, this makes me very sad. My conscience wants more sustainable foresting. In the future, we will keep learning to do things better.
Do things better because Belayan River Timber and the Nature Conservancy are coming up with less destructive ways of logging. Using engines much smaller than bulldozers. Think of this as no-gash logging. Again, Bronson Griscom.
With this system, you are essentially sliding the logs along a very narrow skid trail that requires no bulldozer. So in the spirit of small is beautiful, we have a much smaller machine. It's an engine. How much, do you know how much horsepower? 22 horsepower. And then a bulldozer would be how much?
300.
So you've got an engine that is 10 times smaller, and that is powering a big spool with a metal cable on it, and it's just a very simple device.
This cable winch system uses one-tenth the fuel of logging with bulldozers. It's low-key enough that one guy is riding a log on its slow path uphill as if it's a surfboard. Smaller engines mean fewer emissions, and fewer roads mean fewer cut trees, more carbon left in the forest. The Nature Conservancy is now working with 8 of the 13 timber companies who own rights in this district. One of them recently won FSC, or Forest Stewardship Council certification. Here again is the Conservancy's Nawa Irianto.
In this plot, we still can see, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 big trees. Means per hectare, there are still 7 big trees. It's still a healthy forest.
Irianto is showing off a forest that still has large trees, even though it was logged. This selective logging is a middle path between clear-cutting and roping off the forest. If forests are harvested sustainably, they have the potential to sequester more carbon than if they're simply left alone. The bulldozer logging path, too, is already growing over. That's because the operator left small hills, like giant speed bumps, every 20 yards. You've built a berm here so that when it rains, the water is not going to flow down the skid road.
Yes, yes. And then the water run that way, slowly, slowly and slowly, and not heavy material down to the river.
Nawa Irianto is the one who does much of the work of persuading timber operators here to adopt these progressive practices. He's perennially sunny and caffeine-charged and happy to explain.
You know, usually people...
Usually there is resistance when they encounter an environmental organization, because most nonprofits are all about advocacy. But once they see we have an economic approach and that there will be benefits to certification because they will get a premium price, and they can see nearby another company got certified, it's easier for us to convince the owners to move forward with certification.
Certified lumber can fetch 3.5 times the price of non-certified. As part of the certification, this company also has an inspector now, a tree guardian. His name is Bissam.
How about some of your guys that you have working out here? Don't they say, hey, can I take this one? This one's good.
Yeah, they say that sometimes, but I forbid them from cutting the tree. I say, no, you can't, because this is a protected tree. If you want to cut a tree, do it in your own village, on land owned by your community. You can do whatever you want there, but not here.
Bisam is part of the new face of Indonesia and many other developing countries, well-educated young professionals who want sustainable development. And later, in the timber camp barracks where he sleeps, Bisam says not just his education, but things he's witnessed also make him yearn for forest protection.
Saya itu perubahan air itu kan sering kena banjir kan. Padahal zaman dulunya waktu 82 itu tidak ada.
There are floods now, and there didn't used to be. My own home was destroyed by a flood. My house was destroyed because of deforestation means forests cannot absorb rainwater anymore.
But if the Nature Conservancy hopes to lower forest carbon emissions across this whole district in eastern Borneo, it must work not just with logging companies, it'll also have to work closely with government at several levels. Government controls who gets to do what with land. Private ownership of land in Indonesia is practically unknown. Government slates different tracts for different uses. So the Nature Conservancy is making itself a presence right inside government offices.
Working directly with them. So we come to their office, they come to our office, transferring knowledge and to show to them like the whole world is looking on them.
That's Fakhriz Al-Nasher. He's the Nature Conservancy's main government liaison in the region. Nasher says you wouldn't believe the impact it has on local officials when they get access to modern land use tools like satellite maps and simulations.
If you can imagine like this, Bupati, the head, the number one person in this district, if he come to his office room and then he see his area, oh, this is the forest that I got, and then he can play with that. If I do this, if I change this, what will be the impact? What will be the economic gains? And then he knows like what kind of decision making he's going to make and how that will impact to his own people.
Nasher wants to show local officials that conservation forestry can pay.
We need to put more options to the forest. You know, we need to put that it's not only palm oil conversion that the most viable economic for these areas, but there are more than that.
What the Nature Conservancy hopes to do is contract with logging companies and other industries across the district to lower their carbon emissions. In exchange, they'll be paid. The initial money to pay them will come from donors like France and Norway. Eventually, the emissions reductions become a commodity that can be sold by a special Indonesian board set up for that purpose. This effort provides a crucial first-of-its-kind link between a local project and a national government's promise to reduce emissions. The Nature Conservancy's efforts in Indonesia are well known and often cited by Indonesian officials. The whole project is still very much in the early stages. No contracts signed, no carbon credits sold. But the group's hope is that it has found a way to protect forest and the amazingly diverse life within it. If enough of that life is left there, the warm, wet forests here can regenerate, absorbing more of the carbon human beings send out. Nature, then, helping to save us from ourselves. For Living on Earth, I'm Ingrid Lobet.
Just ahead, the promise of red may be big, but all that cash is attracting the attention of organized crime and carbon cowboys. Stay tuned to Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment, and from Gilman Ordway for coverage of conservation and environmental change. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.